Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. Crimes against the gay and lesbian community are up nationwide, even with a greater public awareness of this problem. I'm joined by Lisa Gilmore. She's the Director of Education and Victim Advocacy at the Center on Halsted and on the Governance Committee of the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs, which issued a new report on the topic. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you.
Your findings are that there was a 13% increase in attacks against gays and lesbians in 2010, and that minorities and transgendered women were most likely to be targeted. What's going on? How is our society not evolving out of this type of visceral hatred?
Well, one thing I want to make sure to point out from the beginning for folks who are listening who are big into data is to make sure that there's an understanding that we're seeing a 13% increase in reports of incidents. So it may be that the number of incidents of violence have increased, and it also may be that it has remained similar, but more people know to report the incidents to us. So I just want to make sure to highlight that distinction that we're talking about the reports that we get. Sometimes, with the lead into your question, even though there's more visibility nowadays, I think that actually sometimes for certain people, increased visibility actually results in increased risk. That sometimes what we can see happening is that when LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender issues are being talked about in the media in relation to policy, legislation, civil rights, human rights, all of those things, sometimes that actually motivates people seemingly to become violent. As a reaction almost of like, oh, now I'm being reminded again that you still exist and you still want rights and I don't think you should get them. So sometimes visibility and increased conversation for some amount of time actually produces a backlash.
What kind of numbers have we seen of these kinds of attacks?
What we had in our last report, trying to find the numbers here. The most disturbing, of course, is in relation to the highest level of violence, which is murder. And in 2010, there were 27 murders that were reported to members of our National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs, and that's the second highest number of murders that have been recorded since we began doing this reporting back in 1996. As you alluded to in your opening, the people that are most likely to experience the most severe forms of violence are transgender women, who are people that were born and identified as male, but they themselves identify and live as women. And people of color are also more likely targeted for hate-motivated violence.
And these attackers, are they typically strangers to the ones they're attacking?
It really depends. Most likely, what we see is that the highest number of events are located actually near people's homes or in where they are, where they are housed. And so sometimes it is a stranger, but sometimes it's also related to their neighbors. And then sometimes there are also family members who are attacking. It really is. It's hard to make a really clear picture of who are folks who are involved, but typically the folks that are most likely a perpetrator are white, and they are non-transgender men, so white males.
And when you look at an attack that's against somebody because of their sexual orientation, would that not be then labeled as a hate crime?
It really depends. Part of the thing, so our report itself is counting reported incidents of hate violence. Hate violence is a definition that's not a legal definition. It speaks to a continuum of violence, including discrimination, verbal harassment, property damage, physical violence, all the way up to murder, right, which is a crime. Hate crime itself is dependent upon the local law enforcement and state statute. So, for instance, in the state of Indiana, there are no hate crimes laws for any category, so no hate crime will ever be reported as occurring by local law enforcement in the state of Indiana because they don't have a law that says it is such a thing.
And you're saying typically it requires a murder for it to be considered a hate crime?
No, not even. They would just consider it murder.
I see.
You know, right, if, so what, mm-hmm. when you're looking at places that have hate crime statutes, right, like the state of Illinois has hate crime statutes, and when what hate crime is that there is something that has occurred that meets the definition of crime, like a battery or an assault or a homicide, and then there is something underneath it that shows that it was motivated by hate or bias.
Here in Michigan, the group Equality Michigan says crimes against gays actually fell more than 25% last year. Do you concur? And do we see significant differences in the rate of attacks in different regions of the country?
You know, we've seen different patterns or different trends over the years. And, you know, in 2009, a trend that we noticed was that hate violence was up in the Midwest, where it was not in other places. So, you know, that can be something. I don't know necessarily what might be going on within Michigan. Also, again, I think it's important to point out, are they talking about hate crimes in terms of what local law enforcement has labeled as hate crime, or are they talking about reports of hate violence that they have received at Equality Michigan? And again, in both of those instances, if people make a choice, whether they victims and survivors make choices about if they are going to report those to a place like Equality Michigan or where I work, Center on Halsted, people also make a choice about whether or not they're going to report it to the police, to local law enforcement.
I'm talking to Lisa Gilmore, Director of Education and Victim Advocacy at Center on Halsted and on the Governance Committee of the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs. So with 50% of 2010 assault survivors not making a police report, why are we seeing that? I mean, why are so few of those that are attacked reporting that to the police?
I can tell you in my situation, the calls that we take here, typically, people report, if they report that they are not going to be also contacting law enforcement, they cite that they have had a fear of or prior bad experiences with law enforcement.
You know, a wildly popular program like GLEE, which focuses on bullying specifically against a gay student, do you think that helps educate the public about the experiences of gay and lesbians, and does it help reduce violence against them?
You know, I think that having more representation in media that is positive and that speaks to these kinds of experiences can be really helpful. I'm not sure exactly who all it reaches. There are studies, and I can't name the names of the studies or quote them to you right now, but there are studies recently that indicate that younger people, younger Americans, are more accepting of and understanding of LGBT people. And so perhaps, you know, shows like Glee or other folks that are on television or in movies do have some kind of impact on people where a lot of their beliefs are still kind of developing. I don't know what it does necessarily to change someone who might be staunchly anti-gay.
What about those in some religious communities that view being gay as an immoral way of life and maintain it's a behavioral choice? Do you feel that that's a factor in fueling some of these hate crimes?
You know, I can't speak to that except to say that, you know, for folks who there can be some real difficult separations to get past. Right. And nobody is necessarily out saying people have to change their religious views. But for sure, people shouldn't be doing things that are unlawful or attacking. Those are things that are very much against kind of, you know, the American way.
And finally, when it comes to state and federal officials, are they doing enough to protect gays and lesbians, or should more be done legislatively to protect those in that community from these types of assaults?
I think it's an interesting point to bring up. How much does law and government actually change people's perspective? It is, you know, is it more that legislative changes or legal ramifications change people's attitudes and behavior, or do things more like you pointed out earlier, being seen on television or out in public or having coworkers, you know, that you're friends with or colleagues with, do those things do more to change minds than the law? I can say that it's still kind of uncertain what the ramification of the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act is going to be with sexual orientation and gender identity, along with gender and disability, being added into hate crimes law at the federal level. It's still maintains to be seen how that will end up being, if that will end up having a significant impact or not, in terms of people's changing of their behavior.
Lisa Gilmore, Director of Education and Victim Advocacy at the Center on Halsted, and also on the Governance Committee of the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs. Thank you for joining me, Lisa.
You're absolutely welcome. Thank you.
And we'll be right back with more. I'm Michael Cohen, and you're listening to 1320 WILS.